Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
We are here at the 2025 NRB Convention. That's the National Religious Broadcasters Convention with some 5,000 people. And we have so many friends and colleagues here. So we're very grateful to have with us today E.J. Kimball. E.J. is a great friend to the ICDJ. We've done many joint programs together, making our audiences aware of the problem of rising anti-Semitism. So E.J. is with the Combat Anti-Semitism Movement. And so, E.J., I want to welcome you. Thank you for being on the program.
Thanks, Susan. Good to be here with you at NRB.
Yes, it's always fun. So, E.J., tell our audience a bit about Combat Anti-Semitism Movement. What is it and what do you do?
Sure. So, Combat Anti-Semitism Movement, we are, as the name says, we are a movement. Over 850 partner organizations, including the ICEJ. And we were started about 6 years ago to come up with new, fresh solutions to fighting the world's oldest hatred. If the legacy organizations were successful in defeating anti-Semitism, we wouldn't be here. Unfortunately, the issue of anti-Semitism continues to metastasize, and we need new, fresh ideas to combat it with the new technologies that we're dealing with in the world and looking at new approaches. How do we reach the millennials? How do we reach these different subgroups that are being influenced and starting to go down this path of, increasing anti-Semitism? So we as an organization work to bring partners together who are working on the issues so that we can amplify their work. And then we look to fill the gaps. We are doing work in Latin America, bringing together countries and leaders in those countries. We're working in the U.S. not just at the federal level, but we're working at the state and local level to help with mayors and city councils, because to fight anti-Semitism ultimately has to be fought at the ground level, to equip people with the knowledge and the tools to actually combat it. And we're working internationally in Europe, in Australia. So we're taking a whole of world approach to fighting anti-Semitism. And then we're looking at the different areas and, our partnership working with the evangelical Christian community has been a very important one because in many ways we are natural partners in this fight.
Well, E.J., you all have done a great job at building a very powerful network, actually. You have how many organizations now?
Over 850.
That's amazing. Yeah. And in how many countries?
Oh, too many to count, which is a good problem.
And then you've activated a lot of individuals also.
So. Yes, we've got millions, over 5 million individuals, over 250 influencers. We're on social media. We're looking at different avenues to bring this message, whether it's doing podcasts, doing TV, doing events. We're doing, in a few weeks, we're doing a summit in New York City for students and, future leaders on these issues. So we're constantly looking for ways to reach new audiences and prepare the ground for the future.
Isn't it kind of a overwhelming task? I mean, there's so much work that needs to be done. But I've really admired what you all have done, reaching out to all the mayors of the major cities and the state governments. And you've really had a really good strategy to get leaders aware of the problem. And that's what I've noticed is a lot, like in the Christian community, there's a lot of pastors and Christian leaders that actually were unaware of the problem until October the 7th. Now it's become so obvious that many, many more now are aware of the problem, but they don't understand the problem. They don't understand what the root of it is and therefore how to combat it, what to do. So could you explain maybe a bit of where is anti-Semitism found in America? Is it on the left? Is it on the right? Is it in the fringes? Is it in the mainstream? And what do you think the Christian community can do to help combat it?
So anti-Semitism, unfortunately, is everywhere in this country. It's on the right. It's on the left. The anti-Semitism on the right was sort of like the traditional anti-Semitism, if you will, in America. It was, you know, the KKK, the neo-Nazis, you know, excluding Jews from country clubs, you know,
right.
It was very overt. People, you saw it, you knew what it was because people were unafraid. And even today on the right, you see anti-Semitism and it's unabashed. You know, they very, you know, overt, you know, the Jews are the problem. And so it's recognized and, you know, that used to be on the fringe and it's become part of, I don't want to say mainstream conversation, but it's known. On the left, it was hiding, you know, masquerading as with different excuses. It was, we're not anti-Semitic, we're anti-Zionist. We don't hate Jews. We just hate the policies of the state of Israel, which was really, we hate the state of Israel, which was really, we hate Jews. But it was masquerading in that way. It was masquerading under the guise of free speech on college campuses, shouting down Israeli speakers who had come, and universities were excusing it as they're exercising their free speech. This is our democracy. And it was just being in some ways swept under the rug. But the whole time it was percolating. And then after October 7th, what we saw on October 8th on college campuses was not spontaneous. This had been years and generations in the making of this environment that was being cultivated on college campuses being exploited after October 7th. I view it as more of an insidious anti-Semitism because it tries to hide itself and burrow within protections under the law and try to pretend that it's something that it isn't. But that has become, from the left, has certainly become part of the mainstream conversations, these open debates about basically should Jews be able to, you know, walk around freely on college campuses and join groups if they support Israel. The fact that those are questions that are actually being debated is ludicrous to me. The biggest challenge today is how do you push that stuff back into the fringes so that it's not part of civil society and civil conversations, and so that people are embarrassed to actually say those things out loud and bring about more. And that's the challenge that you have when you've got a social media where you reject it, but they still have all of their followers, even if it's rejected by polite society.
I think social media is really a major player here. And that's why these fringe movements have been able to, number one, find each other and link arms and cross-pollinate. But they've also been able to reach a lot of innocent people with false information through social media. And that's the thing that concerns me the most. It's because our young people are all living on social media and they're being bombarded with this messaging that is anti-Semitic, it's hate-filled, it's paranoia, and it is a false narrative. And we have to equip them, you know, to fight back. I want to ask you also about the government role in this and there is a definition of anti-Semitism that you all have been promoting to get organizations, schools, institutions, governments to adopt. It's called the IHRA definition, which is capital IHRA, and it stands for International Holocaust
Remembrance Alliance. Yes.
IHRA.
A lot easier to just say IHRA.
So the IHRA definition, you'd think it'd be straightforward. Okay, let's adopt a definition of anti-Semitism so that we can enforce it on campus and we can enforce it through the government. But there's even some on the right have been a little hesitant about this IRA definition. Why is that?
So the IRA definition has two parts. There's a definition itself, a certain perception of Jews, and goes through you know, a few sentences. But then it includes a 11 contemporary examples of things that may be anti-Semitic. And it's, some are very, you know, the traditional, you know, anti-Semitic tropes. And then there's modern anti-Semitic tropes that, that go on. And so some of them are, you know, denying the Holocaust. Doesn't mean that if you deny the Holocaust, you are anti-Semitic, but you might be. It may be anti-Semitic. So there are some on, and this has been a concerted effort from the opponents of defining anti-Semitism to raise the concerns that this would limit free speech, which it doesn't. The whole purpose of this is you have to define a problem. And if you don't define a problem, how can you solve a problem? So this is about defining the problem very clearly, that anti-Zionism that we talked about before, you know, that we just hate the policies of the state of Israel. The state of Israel shouldn't exist, but Jews are fine. That is just masquerading of anti-Semitism. That criticism of the Israeli government's policies is fine. And it's not restricting your speech, but speech does have impacts, and that could influence job opportunities, contracting with the federal government or state governments. The one area where there's been a lot of concern is references of possible, you know, possible anti-Semitic statements. And it revolves around the death of Jesus and Jewish responsibility for the death of Jesus. And it's not saying that we're Jews responsible for Jesus's death. It's blaming Israel or Israelis today for the death of Jesus back then. And there's been misinformation put out that it would prevent, you know, preaching the Bible and talking about this and limit Christianity, which has been refuted. And I know that you've talked about this as well. That's not what it does. It's not what it says. But people are reading into it more than it is.
The problem is, in the definition, it doesn't explain it in any way. It just uses that trope as one of the examples that the Jews killed Jesus. And so a Christian that knows their New Testament that tells the story of how the Jewish leaders 2,000 years ago handed Jesus over to be crucified, so they think that that definition or that example goes against the New Testament. That's what's being accused. But that's not the case at all. What the writers meant when they used that trope is that it's blaming Jews throughout all of history, including today, for what happened 2,000 years ago. So I think I would love to add a little footnote in there on the IRA definition so that that could be explained. But I think that with some better education, we can reach
it is. And, you know, Congress in the House, they passed a bill last year, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which codified the IRA working definition. It didn't end up coming through the Senate. So it's like Congress is used to doing. We're back at square one, starting again. Bills have been introduced. And so there's these challenges that have come up since then. But yeah, I'm confident that we'll be able to work things out. But we also have a new administration that is taking bold action, including setting up a task force through the Department of Justice to investigate the Hamas role of not the Hamas role of October 7th, but those in and outside the U.S. connected with Hamas, which is a U.S. designated terrorist organization. To be clear, that's why, as a U.S. designated terrorist organization, those that are working with Hamas or getting money, you know, from Hamas or those affiliated with them may be in violation of U.S. law. So,
and vice versa. There's a U.S. charity that's now being shut down because it was funding Hamas, which is a terrorist organization. So, but you're saying money was actually flowing into the country
as well. So groups, so Hamas, you know, is savvy, and it wasn't you know, writing a check from Rafa to groups here, but working through different channels to get money to groups. And that's what's alleged. And now we've got at the Department of Justice a task force set up, an interagency task force to investigate this and to shut it down. Something that's long overdue, groups in the United States that have been supportive of Hamas, which under the law would be providing material support to a terrorist organization. These groups have not been focused on. They have not been investigated adequately. And if you're providing material support to terrorism, you know, that's a crime.
So, EJ, are you hopeful with this new administration that there's going to be more pushback against anti-Semitism than maybe before?
I am. I'm very hopeful. I mean, we're only a month in as of today. And there's already been changes, not just executive orders from the administration, but we've seen changes on college campuses where in really the week before President Trump was sworn back into office, you already saw some of these universities changing their policies because they knew what was coming. There's going to be significant punishment for not following the law. And that's the key part. It's not that colleges need to do new things to protect Jews. They need to enforce the current laws on the books to protect Jews under the Civil Rights Act. And that just wasn't happening. And now we're already seeing a shift. And I think we're going to see a significant shift moving forward in the next few months.
Well, right after October 7th, the anti-Semitism was so bad on the college campuses. We organized a letter. We wrote a letter to over 300 university presidents of secular universities, state colleges, and asking them, number one, to adopt a definition of anti-Semitism and enforce it on campus, and secondly, provide greater security for their Jewish students. And we had, I think, 120 Christian leaders that signed that letter, and I think it was very impactful that the Christian community was standing up for the safety of the Jewish students.
So I'll say, you know, being here at NRB, a Jew, working with Christians, it's something that I've been working on, as you know, for years, the Jewish-Christian relationship. But I've noticed since October 7th, a lot more openness and receptiveness from the Jewish community to working with Christians who are sitting there with their hands out saying, we love you, we want to work with you, we want to be part of this. Where there was pushback for years, there's a lot more openness. And I think we see that here. There's so many Jews here at the NRB.
Yes.
And, you know, it's every year I see more and more Jewish representation here. I think for Christians, it's very important to be aware of what's going on, to familiarize themselves. I've noticed just personally, post October 7th, some of my Christian friends know what happened on October 7th. They followed the news. Others don't.
Really?
And now there are some, when they get informed, they say they don't realize that there's still five American hostages being held in Gaza. They didn't know. And then they go ahead and they start learning more. And you can understand, I understand it in the sense of people look at themselves first. It's a natural instinct. How does this impact me? And while it's bad for others, it's not where my day-to-day focus is. But when they hear about it, they're looking into it. And the care and the fact that they're going to look at it is a lot. It helps a lot to know that there are allies, that you're standing with us. The other part is this issue is not just a Jewish problem anymore. I've been talking at NRB, we need Christian support, you need to get up there, talk about this, because it's not just going to impact us, it's going to impact you too. And now it is impacting Christians. Christians are specifically being targeted for their support of Israel and the Jewish people. We saw in December 2023, the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting, a Hamas protest broke out there. We've seen Easter services where protests have happened outside churches that support Israel. We saw a Christian school in California targeted and two children murdered because of their support, perceived support for, you know, genocide. That's what the murderer, you know, was claiming. This stuff is now directly hurting Christians because they're following their beliefs and commands to love Israel, love the Jewish people. So if you are a Christian strong in your faith, you are now a direct target of this. It is very helpful and important for Jews to see Christians stand with us when an attack happens, even just to lend their support, to call up a synagogue, a Jewish community center, and just say, we are here, to hold a solidarity event is very important. And most importantly, talk about this in the church. Talk about it to people. Bring in speakers to talk about it. If they're not comfortable themselves talking about it, bring in others. I'm happy to go speak anytime. But there are plenty of people willing to come in and talk about this issue, because the more people that know, the more people that are educated, especially the adults, they need to be telling their children at home. They need to be teaching this at home, because if you wait for it to happen in the school system, we're going to be in a very, very terrible situation not too long.
Yes, and then there is the power of prayer.
Yes.
And so our churches need to be praying for the Jewish people and praying for their safety and praying against this evil, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's an evil movement, an evil force. And it's the churches that have the power and joining with the Jewish community and praying.
And it's also just a very important thing on a, you know, spiritual level, that evil needs to be eradicated. Evil is not to be reasoned with. Evil is to be eradicated.
Yes.
And it's not easy, but that's why good people need to stand up and fight.
Amen. So it's been our privilege to partner with you and with Combat Anti-Semitism Movement. We're looking forward to doing even more this year. I know we're still working on some tentative plans and some ways of educating the Christian leaders and mobilizing them against this problem. So we just want to thank you for being on today and sharing with us, and look forward to our partnership.
Great. Well, pleasure is mine. Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.